Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back, Cracked fans, to another edition of the Cracked Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. We are so excited to be rolling out another interview from our Project Elite series, our attempt to offer NIL-related opportunities to college tennis athletes across the country. On today's show, you're going to hear from one of the newest members to our Project Elite roster, a graduate student now for the Baylor men's tennis team. You'll know him, of course, from his time as a Cal Berkeley player as well. Of course, I'm referring to Jacob Brum, who joins the show today to talk about his decision to head down to Baylor for his final season of college tennis. We talk about his first few weeks in Waco. We talk about the expectations his Baylor men's tennis team has for this 2022 season. Obviously, they're coming off of a year where they made the NCAA final, where they made the national indoor final. And yes, they lose their 4, 5, and 6 singles players. Yes, they lose half of that number one doubles team in Connie Franzen, but they bring a ton of talent back to the team here in 2022. And so I wanted to talk to Jacob about that fact, talk to him about what his expectations are for himself in his final year of college tennis. And I have to say, shout out to Jacob Brum. I think all of you listeners are certainly going to enjoy this conversation. There was a candidness to it that I know I always enjoy. I think you listeners will as well. So of course, a thank you to Jacob for taking the time to chat. We are super excited to have him as part of our Cracked Rackets team. And of course, as part of Project Elite, all of you listeners can expect to hear more from him throughout the 2021-2022 season. But without further ado, let's get to it. My conversation with the newest member of our Project Elite roster, Baylor graduate student, Jacob Brum.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Joining us on the podcast now is our newest athlete as part of our Cracked Rackets Project Elite program. Of course, you will know him from his time at the University of California. He will now be joining the Baylor University team for his final season in college tennis. It's Jacob Brum. Jacob, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. And, you know, your podcast, you're basically the Joe Rogan kind of college tennis. So the pleasure's mine being here.
I don't know if I should take that as a compliment, as a diss. I think I will say this, my hair looks more and more like his every time I wear this freaking hat. So I suppose that is an apt comparison, but I appreciate you saying that. And I appreciate all you've done for college tennis. It's people who care about the sport, who bring the passion, make it a lot easier for me to do my job. And obviously makes me super excited to have you join us as part of our Cracked Rackets Project Elite team. And there's a lot of different things I want to get into today, but for you in particular, and where I like to start with all of our new Project Elite athletes, because what we want to do with this platform is provide you guys a chance to, you know, promote the game, talk about the sport, what it's meant to you. And, you know, obviously, as someone who elected to come back, play an additional season, go to Baylor, what has, you know, college tennis meant to you throughout your career?
I mean, tennis has pretty much been my whole life, just like all of us. And when I was in middle school, high school, you know, the goal was always, you know, college tennis, and we looked up to those guys playing. And then, you know, when you're in it, it's again, it's just everything. And you know, getting the extra COVID year, it was really, I was always going to use it for tennis. And, you know, it really means a lot, and, just have to enjoy everything, you know, enjoy it, you know, while it lasts.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people who don't know, you were a blue chip recruit out of your class of 2017. You're a guy who's from California. And, you know, again, you talk about looking up to those the players who played college tennis before you. Obviously, there's a lot of good college tennis in California. And so I'm curious, because it's different for everyone. Was college tennis something you grew up following, you know, closely, the results? I know I'm trying to think back in that time. If you're class of 2017 obviously the Stevie Johnson era USC teams are right smack dab when you probably started getting into it. You get into those UCLA teams. I'll continue to say that the team that had Klay Thompson, Marcos Giron, and Mackie McDonald, that they didn't win the national championship. A healthy Gage Brimer. I would argue that's like the what-if team of the decade. Anyways, that's a tangent for you, not to get into it. But obviously, you had a Berkeley team that made the semifinals in 16. You had Andre Goranson, and I'm forgetting some names. But JT Nakamura, I want to say. I remember the two.
Nishimura. JT Nishimura.
Nishimura.
Philip Pergevi, Lacat.
Yeah, exactly. Really, so yeah. You know the teams that I'm talking about. It was a good era for California college tennis. And then there's Stanford, too. So was that something you're following and going to matches?
Yeah, so probably my earliest memories of college tennis were from the La Jolla Beach and Tennis Club doubles tournament, sure. Like the Pacific Coast doubles, because I played that when I was 13, 14, 15, and it's like anyone can enter those, yeah. Like that tournament, and then all the college, UCLA, SC, Stanford, you know, all the best California schools play it. So, so I've been seeing college guys. I mean, back then it was probably like, you know, I remember those SC teams with Stevie and Roberto Quiroz and those guys, when I first started playing. And then really I started following it once there's a junior tournament and also a men's open at Ojai. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Pac-12 was, where it is. And, so I just remember seeing, going there when I was in early high school, and just, you know, epic matches between, you know, all those schools. And then, you know, and so by the time I was in high school, I was a full on fan. Yeah. And watching everything. And then I started getting recruited, and then, you know, time flies.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, you know, again, the reason I bring it up is because I feel like you don't see enough events, and I'm glad you point out Ojai specifically, because Ojai might be the gem on the tennis calendar that not nearly enough people know about. You have sort of the intersection, right? It's high school tennis, junior tennis, the men's open. You've got Pac-12s going on simultaneously. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's one of the cooler events you've got going on in the tennis world.
Yeah, I mean, have you ever been to it?
Never, but, you know, okay. I'm an East Coast kid. I feel like you can see that on me.
Yeah. But so a lot of people don't talk about it just because it's over in the West Coast. Yeah. You know, but, and then college tennis, you know, people like following the Big 12, the SEC, you know, AC, you know, and so, it is an unbelievable event with like over 100-something years and, in this tiny, cute town that's so beautiful. And, you know, it does need some more respect. It does. Ojai needs to be talked about more.
Does Jacob Brum have an Ojai title somewhere in the mix, whether at Torrey Pines or just somewhere in the mix?
No. The closest that I came, we were in the finals of the Pac-12, and we were playing SC, and we had beat UCLA the day before. So, and that was a really, really tight match, and so that's the closest that I've come.
Mm-hmm. No, because look, a California high school tennis debate is not one we need to have. I know it gets very, very good over there. You've got Uni, you've got Harvard Westlake, all those schools are dominant. Again, this is what, if you do my job, you have to know those facts. So I know the quality is high.
Yeah, Torrey Pines. I mean, when I played high school tennis, like, it was the players that were playing were, it was pretty wild. I mean, there was like the Brandon Holtz, the Connor Hance, Riley Smith, Michael Janender. I mean, there were teams like Torrey Pines, Uni, Peninsula. I mean, like all the starters on those teams pretty much played D1. Yeah. So it was like, I mean, unreal. And then even at Torrey Pines, so like Taylor Fritz could have played on the team, but he was homeschooled. Kalman Boyd, he did play his freshman year, but so like the team could have been, we could have had like Taylor Fritz, Kalman Boyd, Logan Smith, myself, Timothy Saw, you know, Henry G, and
that's
then
other
like and then others that played too, college tennis too. So I mean, it's SoCal high school tennis is legitimate.
It's D1. You could bring that team to a Division I school, and year one they're competing. Year two they might win a national championship. I remember there was a Uni team. So I was class of 2013 in high school, and I think the Uni team was like Gage Brimer at one, and this was pre ACL injury. Gage at 17 was freaking unbelievable. And I think Tyler Liu, who went to Yale, he was playing like then, three or something crazy.
Yeah, because they had like Menichella, Andrew Dawson, and Andrew Dawson. I mean, so it was like that team was definitely an all time great.
Did Fritz play a year? I think he did. He play a year.
He did. Yeah, he played his freshman year, and then but so he's a year ahead of me. So my freshman year. Was his sophomore year, and by then he was homeschooled, and then it was like late into that year that he just absolutely took off.
Yeah, that was junior Wimbledon, semis, all that stuff. Yeah. And so, that's again, that team is crazy, and that speaks to the high quality tennis year round. And so, you know, again, when you're training with those quality of players, there are expectations, you know, you want to pursue perhaps pro tennis at some point, or, you know, even before that. You talk about college tennis always being a part of your life. What does that, you know, initial recruiting process look like? Because another thing we want to do with Project Elite is just to educate all of these prospective athletes, parents, what that recruiting process looks like. And obviously, you're a blue chip, top 20 in the nation. Doors are open for you. But, you know, what does that initial contact process look like? And what did the recruiting, you know, journey look like for you?
Yeah, I mean, for any high-level player, blue chip, five-star, you're going to be getting lots of calls right away. And, you know, I'm going to say it how it is. And you're getting a lot of calls, but everyone's getting a lot of calls from those same coaches, you know? And so, it definitely, you know, at the start, it was pretty, you know, you feel important and everything. And, but then you go to your friend and you see that you guys got the exact same text from the exact same coach. And so, you know, it's, you just have to look out for yourself, in the process. And, you know, if you're a high level player, you're going to be getting a lot of calls you've got to be polite and respect their time. And if you're not interested, then, you know, I would tell, you know, schools that I'm not interested, I'm looking elsewhere, you know, and stuff and such. So, I mean, it was from California, it's pretty much all those California schools had seen me play for many years. Mm-hmm. And so, I was kind of leaning more that way, but there were a couple of schools, on the East Coast that, were in my like top four or five also.
And for you, again, because that is something we hear frequently, and this is not to be disrespectful to any coaches, but all of these coaches, you have to send out a million feelers if you're them, because, you know, no two prospects are going to be the same. And, you know, a theme I've heard consistently from players is just, you know, ask as many questions as you can, be as talkative as you can, and just, again, you know, try and be as candid with you can as you can, and try and get the coaches to be honest with you as well. Like, the thing I've heard routinely is that honesty is appreciated above all else. And that sounds kind of, you know, obvious. At the same time, to your point, it feels like you're going to get sold a bill of goods no matter what, and it's kind of on you to ask the questions to figure out how real everything is. Is that a fair assessment to say, you know, again, ask as many questions as possible?
Yeah, I think that's important. I think that the trust is a big one. Mm-hmm. And because, I mean, like, I've been around long enough to where I've heard stories both ways of coaches kind of breaking that trust and players breaking it in the recruiting process. And so, you know, I've even had my own experiences in the process. Mm-hmm. And so, like, ultimately, if I could give just my looking back, like, my biggest advice is find your school pretty much as fast as possible and lock it in, and then you don't have to worry about it, and you can, you know. So what's difficult is when you know, the player strings along a coach, mm-hmm. you know, because they really want this other school, but then they're just delaying things, or like the coach is kind of doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so, like, my biggest thing is, like, there's enough great schools out there that just as ASAP, I mean, don't rush your decision, but find the school and just lock it in. Like, that's my biggest advice.
No, there's a freedom that comes with that, right? Because once you are committed, the calls stop, and you can just go out and play.
Yeah, and come on, like, we all want to, when we're in high school, we want to go to tournaments wearing our college gear and yeah. stuff for our future school. And so it's like, just lock it in, go and wear your, you know, Cal or Baylor gear, yeah. When everyone else is still in the process and you're wearing that, and then the coach will commit fully to you, and in every tournament he'll watch all your matches and already start that. So it is at the end of the day, honestly, it is pretty much first come, first serve, if the coach is fully invested in you and really wants you.
No, that's a fascinating way of putting it, obviously. And, you know, I'm really curious, and this is where because, again, as much as I do want to talk about your time at Cal, you are now a Baylor Bear. And I feel like the weirdest thing is probably switching from the golden blue of Cal to the green and yellow, whatever colors of Baylor. That's the weird thing, right, is just the switch in color. You're like, I was so used to seeing myself in blue. I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, it's honestly, you're so right. the first couple times, like, I saw myself on play site in Baylor gear, and like, even like putting it on for the first time in the locker room, like, because I mean, I had played tennis pretty much every day, whether at Cal or at home, always in the same clothes. So as weird as it sounds, I mean, it's after going like 5 years wearing blue and gold every day, yeah. like every day, it was odd at first, you know, but both schools are Bears though. So so that is one thing. I got to keep the mascot and everything, but, yeah, I mean, you know, and then Cal with Under Armour, and which they had been getting better, like, their clothes had been improving every year. And then here's Nike, and in my opinion, Nike's the
best. Nike.
Nike college tennis gear, Nike's pretty sweet.
The thing you were most comfortable upgrading was the shoes. We'll put it like that, right?
So at Cal, we actually had ASICs. So we wore ASIC shoes, which actually, like, yeah, they were actually, I had never worn them before going there. And then I actually fell in love with them. But then the Nikes are all just awesome too. Yeah. So it,
Enough said. I agree with you there. But I all of that is a setup to say, and I appreciate you entertaining that thought because I agree with you. And I'm very fortunate coaches are kind enough to send me gear. And I went to Michigan. I grew up a Michigan fan. And, like, I will put on the Tennessee shirt or whatever. I'm like, huh. I'm like, this is a little strange. That, again, I'm like, orange. You know, this jawline looks good with orange. But more broadly, the recruiting process part two. Because, you know, again, you had had success at your time at Cal and just given for so many players, you know, for so many teams right now, you're what they're looking for. Just get me a senior who knows how to operate in the college tennis world. I can throw into my lineup, no problem, and we can just rock and roll. There's a big market for, not to use the market term, but there is a big market for that right now at the top of college tennis, particularly given just how deep each and every team at the top seems to be. So for you, recruiting process part two, was it easier this time? And just, you know, ultimately, how do you end up at Baylor?
Yeah, so it's funny. My first few years at Cal, I would talk with my teammates, be like, man, what if it, what if college tennis was like the NBA where you had like free agency and, you know, we could, you know, request trades or whatever, or leave and then go. And like pretty much this extra COVID year is like exactly that. Like we become free agents after our 4 years. And, you know, that part's kind of funny. And, but that's honestly what it is. It's you first have to go on the transfer portal for the schools to contact you. And now that involves telling your coach that you're currently at the school. Mm-hmm. And so Peter Wright, the head coach at Cal, was fully supportive of all of us and our decisions. And so that was, you know, no problem going on the portal because at the end of the day, we just wanted to see what options were out there. You know, we all were thinking of potentially staying at Cal. Mm-hmm. And so I went onto the portal before my senior year. So pretty early, actually, to see. And then again, it's when you go on the portal, you get a lot of messages right away. Mm-hmm. And again, you should respect the coach's time. And Woodson reached out and so how I ended up here was really I didn't have a really relationship with Coach Woodson before. I mean, I had my freshman year, we played Baylor. Mm-hmm. And it came down to my match versus Roy Smith. Mm-hmm. And for the match, and I was down 0-3 in the third, and I came back and won and clinched. And Woodson was on my court the whole match. And so after that match, whenever I would see him at tournaments, he would go out of his way to talk with me and such. And so and then also my sophomore year, unfortunately, my mom passed away, and he was one of the few people in really college tennis that talked with me about that, because his mom, you know, passed away also his sophomore year. And so really, it's just a story of it pays off to be nice to people. Yeah. And so how I ended up at choosing Baylor was because of Michael Woodson. Mm-hmm. And learning from all my college experiences before is that one of the most, if not the most important thing is the head coach at the program you're going to, and having a good relationship with him, trusting him. And pretty much all of my experiences with Coach Woodson leading up to that, you know, I trusted him, and I honestly wanted to play for him. Like, it was like all of my encounters with him, I wanted to play for him. And so that's really why I ended up here. And also, it was a tennis decision too, you know, like when you have the extra year, and I wanted to go to the best tennis school as possible, you know, and I could. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty much Baylor, right?
I'm just curious. Does he send you footage of Stachowiak and Furman, and just like, this is you next year? Like, this is you.
Yeah, I mean, he not exactly. He loves you know, keeping your confidence high, but you stay grounded, you know. Yeah, and so he, and so and not putting pressure, you know, on yourself. And so but yeah, it is funny though how you know, Broom and Furman and them, you know, it's very similar. And especially I mean, all those guys, they came from great academic schools, you know, and they wanted to, you know, add tennis, you know, they wanted a shot at a national championship. And that's similar to my situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And now, again, I want to talk about the tennis on campus, because you've been there now, what, about a month?
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, you know, it's a team that brings back pound for pound, maybe the hardest hitting tennis player in the world, in Adrian Boitin. I mean, you've got to see it up close now. The ball just freaking explodes off his racket. Finals for him in Champaign. He's coming back, and Soto's coming back if he ever gets done practicing with Murray, and Sven Law's coming back, and obviously you guys bring in yourself, you know, you bring in a bunch of transfers as well. You got guys like Finn Bass,
Teddy,
coming back. Yeah, exactly.
There's Teddy,
Teddy, that's another one.
Know,
yeah, exactly.
Mizucci, Finn Bass. So I mean, it is pretty wild. Yeah.
And so my question to you is, talk about the tennis. It's not to say your teams at Cal weren't good, because obviously you played with some incredible players while there, but there's a lot of talent. You could argue 1 through 9. You've got 9 starters on this Baylor roster, maybe more. How's that been acclimating to that environment?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's great. You know, it's wild. Just every day you have guys that push each other, and we all have similar goals, and you know, it's just, yeah, it's awesome, you know, and it's awesome. And you know, it's also though the program here, like the professionalism of the program is you know, like what I've, you know, like the biggest takeaway of this first month, you know. And it's like, I mean, at the end of the day, like my teammates, they're friends, and they're still just people, you know, and I had great teammates at Cal, you know, that, you know, are my best friends forever now, you know? And so, but I've been around, and I've seen enough programs, and I have friends that almost all programs, to know that it's impossible to have a more professional program than what's here at Baylor. And it's impossible to have more resources than what you have at Baylor. You can be tied. Like, a program could be the same as here, but it's actually not possible to have more and better here. Like, that is fully, I'm not being biased here. That is like 5 years now in college tennis.
No, sorry to cut you off, but to your point, to what you're talking about, for our listeners who may not be aware, brand new locker room unveiled yesterday. That thing is beautiful. You talk about the Herd Tennis Center. It's not exactly old by any stretch of the imagination. You've got the indoor courts as well. You've got, you know, the tutors if you need them. You've got the practice times. You've got the coaches. You've got the full training center. And look, there are other – to your point, there are other schools who certainly do it as well. And just because we're not mentioning them doesn't mean they don't exist. But for you – again, because to talk about it, because I believe you graduated from Berkeley, right? You got your degree. You know, and mazel tov to you, as we say in my culture, always a good thing. But for you to get to just have a year to be essentially, I don't want to say just a pro tennis player, but to get to pursue tennis to the fullest, because that is what this extra year does offer so many of the players who had that year robbed from them. Baylor's in the best position to make the most of that. You know, you're a guy who went to Tunisia for like 4 months this season. You don't go to Tunisia for 4 months unless you have some pro tennis aspirations. Baylor helps you pursue those pro tennis aspirations.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not just the looks of the facilities and everything too. It's the day to day, like, you know, structure and professionalism. I mean, I trained full time at the USTA in Carson when I was 12 to 16 or so. And honestly, I don't know if top 100 Americans have better setups than what we have at Baylor. I mean, it's pretty wild. Like it's pretty wild. You know, it's exactly what I signed up for and could have hoped for. And so it's great here.
We put on 10 pounds of muscles since you moved in. What are we talking?
Yeah, the packing on the muscle and losing body fat just busy training all day. It's a dream to be a college pro, basically.
Yeah, if you told me any coach did 3 minutes of cryotherapy every day, I would say it's Michael Woodson. He just hops in that ice machine. He's just like 3 minutes, blast it, and he comes out a new man. But no, I mean, that's so awesome to hear. And again, you know the talent on the roster. You've been around teams that have, you know, obviously had success. You've been on teams that have had success. What is the buzz around this team? And we've talked about the talent, but they're coming off of a national, an NCAA final. They're coming off of a Big 12 title. They're coming off of a national indoor final as well. The expectations were set last season. You bring back the top three. You bring in a lot of talent to replace what's lost in obviously a bottom three that was arguably, outside of perhaps Florida, the best in the nation. You know, what is the buzz? What are the expectations for you guys? What are, you know, the goals you're setting for yourself entering this season?
I mean, the goal is to last match. Mm-hmm. You know, we're coming off the court having won it.
Yeah.
So that's bottom line. Like, I mean, there's not really much else.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's what should be, right, with the amount of talent you guys have. I mean, you see it in practice without – I mean, you're biased, but I want to hear the bias here. This is why we have Project Elite. How good is this team? Like, you have been around a bunch of teams. You've seen national championship-winning teams. This isn't to say Florida isn't also as good, but from a talent perspective, this team has the talent?
I mean, I think that Adrian Boynton has surprised me a bit. And I mean, I knew that he was elite, but it really does look like he's like elite of the elite. And and at Cal we were a very good team, but we didn't have a number one that would you put him up against top 10 teams and you'd pick him, you know. And so that's something that is going to be pretty nice to have, honestly, here. And so I think that with how well he's striking the ball right now, and then we know that the depth, like, you know, I think that this is, you know, this is, I can easily see 5 years from now, people talking about this team, you know, how we started out talking about this other team. And it's, and I think that's the key, is that to win NCAA titles, you need to have a horse, mm-hmm. and then you need to have, you know, depth.
Yeah.
And I think we have a horse and we have depth, and, you know, maybe we honestly, you know, maybe we have honestly a couple horses, you know what I mean? So,
yeah, no, that's such a fascinating way to put it. I mean, yeah, you think back, Frisokos, Borna Gojo, those were the horses, rest of the team come along with us. And yeah, that is so frequently the recipe. And yeah, it's going to be really fun to watch. Now, I am curious from you, because you mentioned a fifth year, you're a guy who's seen all in college tennis. That said, do they still make you do some freshman things? Are you picking up the balls? Are you doing any of that?
There's everyone picks up their own balls here. Everyone picks up their own balls. There's no zero hazing policy here. Freshman.
Not hazing, but teasing. Let's put it like this. Come on. Is it like, you know, are there times when you feel like a freshman or no? Like, because it is just, I guess that's what I'm really trying to ask is, it is a new campus for you.
Yeah, I mean, well, in terms of the school and campus and everything, man, I am complete freshman. I mean, I'm a complete freshman. And you know, like, the thing is that I've known and even played some of these guys before. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they never knew who I was, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've played Baylor, like, you know, again, I'm about to turn 23, you know. I'm one of the few guys who has a car here, you know. And so like, you know, when I'm with the guys, I don't feel like a freshman. Mm-hmm. But
that said, have you had to text Svenlan, been like, hey man, where do I go? Like, I'm a little lost here.
Yeah, no, he took me to class one day. He pretty much just held my hand all the way to class. You know, campus is great here. And honestly, and Waco's the year leading up to this, you know, I had heard so much from just on like social media, or hearing people talk about Waco, and mm-hmm. you know, it's popular mm-hmm. to diss Waco, but this is unbiased. There's no difference between Waco and any other, you know, college town in middle America, you know. Yeah. And so I honestly, like, I think that you know, and I've been to pretty much all of them. And so like, I think you know, I've been impressed with Waco.
Good.
What's said, but
I'm happy to hear that. And I'm curious, biggest adjustment, is it the food? You know, what's it like, your life is in California, you're now in Texas. Is it a cuisine shift? Is it a temperature shift? It's hot as hell in Texas.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah. So the climate is, yeah, it's, I mean, like, I've only ever lived in California. Like, I've only ever lived in Southern California, and then for the last 4 years, the Bay Area. So, yeah. Like, I am, you know, a pretty through and through Californian. And so, you know, so the things right away are like, yeah, weather, way better in California, obviously, but it is good to train. It is good to train in this. Second, like, the people here are really, really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I know that it's like the Southern kind of hospitality and such, but people here are great. Honestly, maybe the average person is actually nicer here than California. Mm-hmm. The food situation. So the dining hall for the athletes here is pretty unreal, actually. Mm-hmm. So food wise, you know, it's pretty great here. And then it's just about, like, trying the other restaurants like in Waco. Like I haven't tried much, but so the biggest adjustment, maybe just the weather, but then also like just they work us hard, you know, like they do work us. And, but yeah.
Yeah, you thought you were in shape, and then you showed up, and it was the first 107-degree day, and you're like, what in the name of Jesus? So I just went on this club tennis – it's really stupid, but I went on this trip with some people I played club tennis with, and we were in Miami. And, like, it's not like I'm training like you, but I like to think I'm still in shape. And, like, I have never felt like I needed to yak on a court until this weekend, where I was, like, 45 minutes, and I was like, oh, my God, is it hot. I imagine there was a day or two like that for you.
Well, it's just like – the ridiculous days, it's just your heart rate just goes, but it's like everything, it just spikes your heart just so easily, where like, you know, things that, I mean, I just remember one day, like, we were hitting outside a bunch, and then the next day, like I hit indoors for some reason, and it was like, I felt like I was a different person because how much easier everything was. And it's just like, so it is,
well,
but it is, but it is cooling down. I think like, I hope so. And so I'm looking forward to the mild temperatures.
No, that's good. I'm glad to hear it. But no, I'm glad again to hear your transition is going well. And, you know, again, for you, over the past year and a half, talking about all the frustrations and just, you know, again, I'm not going to turn this into bash on Cal time and all that, because I think that's stupid. And you obviously have fond memories of Cal, but to not be able to finish out that season, and just, you know, I'm curious how frustrating that was for you guys, just, you know, given you get 2020 stopped by the pandemic, and then, okay, we're bringing back tennis in 2021. It's just like, nope, there goes our season. How, I guess the real thing is, after all of that, how nice is it just to be back on campus competing once again? Is there an added appreciation?
Yeah. So I've really only had 2 years of college tennis.
Yeah.
And, my freshman, sophomore year, and then junior year was COVID. And then this last year is canceled. So, that is wild when you think about it. And then also, the guys at Cal, I mean, that group of guys, I hope they tune into this or whatever, but they, like, it couldn't have been a better group of guys. And because we had a really big recruiting class my freshman year, and we didn't really get anyone the rest of the years. Mm-hmm. So it was just us seven going through all 4 years. And, you know, we're the oldest, and we felt like we could have had a really good year this last year. Wasn't meant to be, and, which is pretty sad, but, you know, we all went our separate ways, and, you know, we still stay in touch like crazy. And, I wish COVID had never happened for the world, but getting this extra opportunity and to not have, you know, and that's bottom line, is to that have my tennis, or at least college tennis, not end on like how things ended at Cal. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, just, it's just, I'm just so fortunate and so lucky. And so that's the main thing, is mm-hmm. that like, just, not, and, you know, and put in 20 years to tennis, you know, yeah. Like let's go out on a great note, you know, not, you know, so that's, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can completely understand that. That's why it's so great to see you at a school where you're enjoying yourself so much. I will say, was it, because your first season was 17-18, right? So 18 would have been your first. Was the Barettos are in your class?
Yeah. So Paul Barreto is my year, and then his brother is a year above.
Okay. So did you guys go to Michigan that 2018 fall for the indoors?
Yeah.
So
wait. Yeah. Wait. Hold on. It wasn't for indoors. It was just for
kickoff weekend.
We went and played.
Oh, no.
It was before kickoff. It was before indoors, and we went to play Illinois and you guys. In just two random matches.
Well, first of all, thank you for you guys. That smile on my face, that makes me very happy that you say it's my team. But I think it was Paul Bretto an apology. I'm pretty sure, because that was pre-podcast. Well, it was during, but I could be biased in those days. And I'm pretty sure he said some mean things to me in the crowd that day. And I remember it not. I think Michigan won the match, if memory serves me correctly. And
yeah, you did, but we had like two or three guys like not play that match.
Yeah, so. Also true. Yes, so, and yeah. So I just remember I remember some frustration on his, so I apologize to him.
Whatever you were doing to piss him off, it was probably deserved. he was playing Miles and I had known Miles before, and I was like, okay, like this match could be incredibly, you know, like chirpy. Intense. Yeah, it's very chirpy, and it was like anything, you know, it was nothing but chirp, basically. That match is, yeah.
And you can imagine the Joe Rogan of college tennis was gravitated towards that court. And so I just plopped myself on court number three right away. And I was
I remember there were a couple videos put on Twitter of a couple line calls too.
Yeah.
From that match.
Yeah, it was pretty. Yeah. It was a fun one, you know, for sure. That was the early days. That was nowadays. I feel protective of all of you. I'm like, I can't be mean to anyone because I like them all. But that's what makes college tennis so special. And you know, again, a ton of fun for you throughout your time at Cal, and now obviously here. You look forward towards this season at Baylor, and you know, again, I'm curious for you coming into this year. You played a bunch of futures events in Tunisia, and I know there were a bunch of guys out there. I know Alex Kotsen over at Columbia was on that grind. I know Oliver Crawford, former Florida player, was having a ton of success on that grind as well. What led for you, you know, that decision to go play those events, and ultimately, you know, what did you take away from the experience?
Yeah, so, I went out there twice, two different trips. The first trip was started in April, so it was basically during the college season when our season had already been canceled. And just the main thing with my coach from home, Scott Kintz, he was the volunteer coach at Cal, but basically like our plan was just to play as much, you know, as many matches as possible, and you know, just play live tennis. And, my only two options really were to play maybe like UTR tournaments, those like UTR things in America, or go kind of play just on the tour and stuff. And so, I had never left North America for a tennis tournament. I had never played honestly like that many futures. Mm-hmm. But I had some points just from like one or two tournaments. And so, you know, I went out there and it was honestly, it was good enough for me to go back a second time. I've now played, in like maybe the most hostile environment, you know, ever, out there alone, you know, in Tunisia. And so, I feel like, you know, I can't play through a tougher circumstances than what was out there. So like, you know, any match for the rest of my life, you know, it's going to be easy compared to out there. So, it's just a lot of experience, and I'm really match tough, and you know.
Yeah, no, and I noticed when you tell people about the trip, do you tell them you beat Matthew Dellavedova? Like the, you know, I know you're an NBA fan, are you like, I beat the Dellavedova, not a different one? Maybe not.
No. No. No, I don't, but that was funny though. I'll he was out there, and like I asked some of the Aussies, like, is he actually like related to that Dellavedova? And then they were like, yeah. And then I was like, damn. Pretty cool.
I am curious for you, you know, again, seeing that level, just the players week in, week out. And another guy, I know August Holmgren was out there, and, you know, I've been taking straw polls of late. Who's going to be the best player in California this season? I'm curious. I'll ask you to put on your pundit hat. There's a lot of August Holmgren nomination because, again, no Kuchman, no, well, maybe Keegan Smith, but you don't know what he's going to look like this season. Yeah, Geller's out there and Ferry's out there and whatever, but a lot of August Holmgren love is perhaps the best college tennis player in California this season. Getting to be out there with those guys, you know, that level of player, what'd you learn about your level?
Yeah, well,
first, on the California question, I'm curious. Yeah.
Well, you know, August and I, well, we won a Dubs feature out there too. So,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, he's a great guy. I mean, he's even better than his tennis. It's just how nice he is as a guy. But Is Keegan coming back?
I think he is going to try and play another season. It's just a question that he's going to try and play. It's just how healthy will he be?
All right. Well, Keegan, I have no doubt that he's going to – if Keegan comes back and plays college tennis, he'll be a beast. Yeah. You know, August Holmgren, I mean, he's been putting up some good results. Even after, like, Tunisia, he's been putting up good results. I mean, like I'm friends with these guys, so I don't want to pick one.
But welcome I'll to say, the difficulty.
The king, yeah, well, the king of California will be someone from or in San Diego. I say that.
Here's like, what I'll ask: Will the best player be playing for USC or UCLA?
USC.
USC or UCLA. USC. Yeah, will the best player be on one of those two rosters? Is it just – I guess it's – that's because I feel like it might not be this year. That's really the point I'm trying to make.
No, I hear you. If I
– No comment?
If I had to say, mm-hmm. I would go with the field.
Okay, that's the answer. Yeah. There it is.
I would go with the field.
Of course, DeJong's another good one over at Pepperdine. There's a ton of talented players across California. And so, you know, up and down the board, it should just be fun to watch, and I just like to instigate. But now, yeah, I agree. It's hard when, like, you try and make a national championship prediction, and then you have coaches coming up to you saying, hey, we're using your prediction as fire. And I'm like, well, that wasn't the point. For you to get a win, you win a futures title. As you mentioned, you and August get the title. I want to say it was in early July. And, you know, you get a win. I think it was over Rinky Hijikata of UNC and Cody Pearson in the final. And I don't, for you guys just to get that sort of title run and to put that under your belt, it's got to be a confidence builder.
Yeah, and that was the first time that August and I had, you know, ever played together, the level out there was pretty good, honestly, in singles doubles. Like there were a lot of good players, but like the biggest takeaway I realized this pretty early on while out there. It's like, man, there are just so many great, like, unreal tennis players in this world. Mm-hmm. Like, it's unbelievable. Just, you know, every country out there has just great players. And, you know, a lot of them, like, I met a lot of guys out there that that just play club tennis or just play money tournaments in Italy and stuff. And it's just like, man, like, there's just so many good players out here. But like, again, like being able to, you know, beat guys like that and get like a first professional title. I used to say when I was younger, like, man, if I ever, you know, got a professional title, like even a future, mm-hmm. like, man, I felt like, you know, my tennis, you know, was kind of worth it, you know, that it validated, you know, all the years and being able to have a, and so that was cool to do, you know, that was,
Yeah, it's got to feel good going back to campus and being like, well, I have a futures title. What have you done? And Adrian's like, well, I made a final of champagne.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like a futures dubs title at Baylor doesn't carry too much weight.
Spann and Matias, they're like, we've all been there, please.
Like, let's be honest. Like, I mean, pretty, yeah, all these guys have put up some pretty sick stuff.
That's the barrier to entry. It's like, well, so do we. Like, oh, cool. Yeah. Welcome to the freaking crew. That's awesome. Well, again, no, that's super fun. And again, in that spirit, let's have some fun. Oh, I guess I have one last serious question to ask you, because you have been a part of College Tennis, and then I want to rapid fire down the home stretch, ask you about your new teammates, but the NIL stuff, because obviously Project Elite, we're able to talk to you throughout the course of the season because of these opportunities created by NIL. And look, you know, it's year five for you. You know the demands of being a student athlete. And, you know, I'm curious, obviously, we've talked about them and touched on them throughout the course of this podcast. But to have the, you know, I guess, has being a college tennis player felt like a full-time job? And what does it mean to be able to, I suppose, benefit off of all of the work you've done to, you know, build yourself up as a college tennis player?
Yeah, I'd say the first thing is that it's a bit unfair that internationals can't use this yet. So I think, like, putting it out there, like, whoever, like, let's please fix that. College tennis is a full-time job. And, you know, people will say, oh, but you get a scholarship for it. And so, you know, should you be able to get paid this and that? I mean, we just sacrifice so much, and, you know, our academics are hurt because of our athletics. You know, we get physically injured, I mean, because of our sport. So I do think that, you know, it's the time has come for this, and it's about time. And I do think that, you know, if I can use my experience now, 5 years as a D1, you know, top college athlete, that I can, you know, help others or, you know, share my story or give advice or, you know, that, you know, I would enjoy doing that. So I think, you know, I'm grateful that they, decided to, but I still think that it's unfair for the internationals. I think that we've, you know, that's a big thing.
Yeah. One imagines an Adrian Boitin, a Matias Soto, a Sven La, are perfectly positioned to take advantage of this. And it's just, yeah, it's ridiculous that they can't, because they are contributing just as much as any. You know, again, tennis is perhaps a bit unique in the fact that there are so many international athletes competing within the sport, but they have meant so much to the game. So I completely agree with you. Their contributions mean as much as anyone else's. And, yeah, to whomever fixes those things, can we fix that pretty quick? That feels like an easy fix. Yeah, that's an easy one. But I know a lot of that has to do with immigration status. It's actually – the truth is it's not an easy fix, because it's about sacrificing, you know, your student visa, and, well, it's not a student visa if you're here working. And, do you want to talk immigration policy? I've got 5 minutes in me. We'll save that for the next pod. But no, again, speaking of your teammates, though, I do want to talk about the new ones at Baylor, because you've gotten the chance to know them a little bit. I want to rapid fire with you down the home stretch here. My first question would be favorite to hit with. Who's your favorite hitting partner of the new crew at Baylor?
I would say Wampi Masucci.
Is it a grind? What are we talking here?
He's just always down to hit.
Yeah,
I think that some guys, it's just easier to get out there than with others.
No, for sure. And it's Juan P. That's what we're going with.
Yeah,
I like that. No, that works for sure. All right, best to get dinner with.
Abby.
Yeah.
Adrian Boitin. Yeah.
Funny guy.
Yeah, he's so funny. Like, there's There'll be times where at dinner, he'll just look at me, and I'll look at him out of nowhere, and we will just start dying laughing. And if he's listening to this, he knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to hear. All right, Messi's locker.
Man, maybe either Ethan Musa, who's a freshman of ours,
sure,
or honestly, maybe Addy too. Addy will just leave his stuff all on his chair outside, like during the whole day. And I'm right next to him, so I mean I notice it or whatever. But one of those two.
Yeah, it makes sense. Also, Boytan Brum, is it alphabetical? That's how it works.
I don't know, because like Mati is right next to me, so it goes Soto Brum, and I'm in the same locker that Charlie Broom was in last year.
Interesting.
So like that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's fun. I hear. Know. By the way, Stachowiak's still sticking around, right?
Yeah, he's around here. Yeah. He's still at school, I think.
Yeah, doing a little hitting as well. No, I feel like again, I feel like that's got to be fun. Just again, having everyone around and just continuing to add to the quality of play. And you know, Furman's off coaching Nebraska now, so the coaching tree continues to expand as well. That's got to be super fun. But again, what is weirdest part about transferring to a new school? Is it the clothing?
I mean that the clothing, it's small, but it is pretty strange. But I think it's just when you're at a school, you just associate yourself with it, you know. And it's like at no point in my 4 years at Cal, before I was on the portal, did I ever think that I would be at any other school than Cal. Mm-hmm. At no point did I think I would be here at Baylor, you know? And so it's like, it's just, you never know what's going to happen in life, and you never know where you're going to end up. And so really, I oftentimes catch myself saying I'll say Cal Athletics, you know, instead of Baylor, athletics. And it's just little things like that. It's representing a school other than, Cal's just
funky,
so different.
Yeah. So if Cal plays Baylor national championship in football, who are you rooting for?
Man, I mean, one that will never happen. Because Cal is they're 0-2 already this year. So, I mean, if I'm currently a student at Baylor, I'll have to go with Baylor.
It's a win-win for you, it feels like.
Yeah, but the thing is that the starting quarterback's in one of my classes, and he sits right next to me. So so I would actually I'd go with Baylor. I toss with him at least.
It would never happen though. That's funny.
It never happened.
Yeah. No,
not even in my dream could that happen.
Yeah, exactly. No, I do. I'm sure there are times when you wait. All right. If they're both playing at noon, who gets the main screen? That's the real question.
Yeah. That's easier. That's Baylor.
Yeah.
because I need to stay up to date on what's happening here.
Exactly. Stay up to date. It's got to be fun, again, to hop on campus and just certainly get that experience. And, again, we're super excited to have you as part of our Cracked Rackets Project Elite program. Hopefully we'll have the chance to check in with you multiple times throughout the course of the season. I'm hoping to make a Texas run as well, just kind of swing through Waco. Austin seems a little far, but Waco – TCU, do that run. Or maybe it is the Texas TCU Baylor run. They're all within 3 hours. I don't know. Texas is freaking huge. So,
it is. Yeah, you should. We're in the middle. An hour and a half north is TCU, an hour and a half south is Austin, and then an hour and a half east is A&M. So it's actually not as bad as you think.
So Waco's the center point. That's good. All roads point back to that. Works.
Yeah, Waco's the heart of Texas, baby.
Right there, that's you right. Spent a lot of time with yeah. Michael Woodson. Very, very clear yeah, with that answer. But, again, we were super excited to get the chance to chat with you. I said 30 minutes. We've gone the full hour. So I appreciate you taking the time. Obviously wishing you and your team success and health. And, yeah, again, don't be a stranger. We look forward to having you on the show hopefully a couple of times throughout the course of the year.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, again, Jacob, thank you so much for taking the time. And, yeah, I'm sure we will chat with you soon.
That's right. Sick 'em, baby.
Hope all of you enjoyed my conversation with Baylor graduate student Jacob Brum. Again, a huge thank you to him for taking the time to chat. Very much looking forward to having the opportunity to speak with him throughout the course of the 2021-2022 season. Of course, if you have missed any of our other conversations as part of our Project Elite program, you can find them all on the Cracked Interviews podcast. You can find them all by going to project-elite.com. Of course, we are so thrilled to have Isabel Boulay, Cannon Kingsley from Ohio State, Kawaisi Kenyatta, Hunter Heck from Illinois now, Jacob Brum, and Cole Gromley from Baylor as part of our team. But of course, we continue to look to expand as well. So if you are a coach, a player, a prospective donor who is intrigued and interested in getting involved in Project Elite, you can contact us again by going through project-elite.com. You can find all of that information also on our website, crackedrackets.com. And of course, again, be on the lookout for more content through this Project Elite program. We had the chance to speak with Illinois' Kawaisi Kenyatta after he and his freshman won an ITF doubles title in Champaign a few weeks ago. If you missed that, that was a bonus episode on the Mini Break podcast. And of course, again, we are so excited to be able to have an inside look at what it takes to be a top-level college tennis player. And so really looking forward to expanding our Project Elite content throughout the course of this offseason and, of course, throughout the course of the 2022, I should say the fall season, not the off season, then of course throughout the 2022 dual match season as well. But again, you miss any of those interviews, you can find them all on our website, crackrackets.com. Mini Break, Great Shot Podcast, all of the shows rocking and rolling this week. If you missed any of them, you can find them all on the website. Of course, like, rate, subscribe, review to each of those shows, leave a review on iTunes as well. I wouldn't ask if it didn't help us with the sponsors, didn't help us with Tennis Channel, didn't help us with the computer guy who seem to dictate so much of the metrics. So again, if you don't mind taking the 30 seconds, it would be very, very much appreciated. Of course, as always, a shout out to our super producers, Max Fligger and Daniel Westoff, for the of any job they do day in, day out. If you need the more immediate updates, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, we are at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at Great Shot Pod. With all that said, for our newest Project Elite member, Jacob Brum, our super producers, Fligner and Westoff, and all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You've been listening to another edition of the Cracked Interviews Podcast. Stay safe, stay healthy. We'll talk to you all soon. Thanks, everyone.